Thought Leader Thursdays are sponsored by Associated Bank. Whether you're buying, building, or refinancing a home, Associated Bank is dedicated to finding the right mortgage solution for you. Visit associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Let's begin this morning with Thought Leader Thursday. Focus in on commercial real estate, the commercial real estate market in the Chicago area. Dan Behrens is with us today. He's a senior vice president in the commercial real estate group at Associated Bank. Dan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell on WGN.
Thanks for having me again, Steve.
I want to jump into a couple of things here, but first I want to talk about some potential warning signs for the commercial real estate space. Some risk in the markets, in the economy. Some developers and landlords are concerned that maybe the economy is starting to burn out just a little bit. What are you hearing? I know you have your ear to the ground.
I'm not hearing anything direct right now or any direct knowledge of any kind of slowdown impending. Warning signs can always be found, especially with us being in, what, a decade into the cycle. Most of my developers are continuing development as usual. We're trying to be obviously as prudent as possible as a bank, maintaining our underwriting standards. But most of our developers aren't going too far out over their skis that would really risk or be kind of an impending doom coming in the near future.
What is the pulse of the market right now, if you could describe it for us? Is it hot? Is it medium hot? Is it simmering? What would be your description of it?
I think it's still white hot. We're, I think, on pace for the bank to have a record year. I know I've been busy all year as well, and that doesn't seem to be slowing down into 2020. I don't see any kind of warning signs yet. There are some indicators, obviously, prices, construction costs going up. But these are kind of normal standard issue, indicators, again, like I said, it's a decade into an upswing cycle.
Talk to us a little bit about what the downturn would look like if it would start. How is the Chicago real estate market, the commercial real estate market specifically, impacted by recession? How would we see that develop?
It would really affect all aspects of real estate. Banks would slow down lending. Developers are probably building less buildings, bringing less product to the market. Tenants aren't out looking for new space.
Consumers are still engaged. That's the important thing. That's the bright spot in the economy right now. Not only engaged, but still employed, and they're still spending. And so that's, you think, from a commercial real estate standpoint, whether it's a building of a new grocery store or whatever, those are the things driving that part of the market.
Absolutely. There's still plenty of business to be had. Businesses are still alive and active, transacting business every day. There's not going to be any kind of abrupt halt to the economy, I would hope, at least, as it was in 2008. The collapse of Bear Stearns and the Lehman Brothers were kind of the pinpoint of the start of the recession. I hope we won't have it. There won't be that abrupt of a commencement of a kind of downturn. Hopefully, it would be a slow ease, slow down in the economy, and by all hopes and expectations, it won't last and be nearly as severe as the previous recession.
I know a couple of times I've specifically mentioned the Chicago commercial real estate market. You oversee the whole region. How are the suburbs doing?
Suburbs are strong. We're doing a lot of retail development. Multifamily is still very active in the suburbs. A new kind of trend in the suburbs is condo deconversion, which had its time, call it a decade or so ago. That trend is returning. So there's still an active marketplace all in the Chicagoland area, including the suburbs with, even the office market is strong in the suburbs, Rosemont in particular. So there's a lot of activity, a lot of money and deals to be made in the suburban Chicago.
You mentioned the deconversions. It's interesting you bring that up because there are two high-profile buildings in Chicago that have been in the news recently. One that is moving forward with deconversion. The other is the members of the condo association of the building have already voted they don't want it, that they're trying to stop it before it happens. What's good and bad about deconversion?
Deconversion, it's a smart play for certain buildings. If you have an older, really worn down building, and you have condo associations that are staring down the barrel of a huge special assessment, you know, say an owner of $100,000 condo may not have $60,000-$70,000 to plow into, you know, completely renovate the exterior of the facade, all new windows, common amenities, whatever the case is. So it could be the deconversion could be a good lifeline for the condo owners that may not have the means to be able to absorb a special assessment. With that being said, on the flip side, you know, if I'm a condo owner and I love where I live, I love my location, I'm happy to spend that. If I have reserves and the condo association has reserves that can fund a special assessment like that, then, you know, being displaced or transitioning from a condo owner to a renter just may not be appealing to a person who may be a long-term resident and someone who really, frankly, doesn't want to move. And, you know, they could be potentially forced out in a rental situation, and that may not be in their long-term plans.
Yeah, because that's the next question I was going to ask is what happens in that situation? Are they always forced out?
Not necessarily. You know, a deconversion, the main driver is that it's obviously revenue for whoever's going to deconvert those condos to apartments. If that developer sees the value in rehabbing all the units and bumping rent, which is how they're going to increase revenue, it's kind of the inevitability of those condo owners. They'll get a fairly decent deal, I'm sure, to remain a tenant when the deconversion is in process. When that's finished, though, rents are surely going up.
I want to talk to you about WeWork. Since the last time you were here, lots has happened with WeWork. This is a company that was getting ready to do its initial public offering and stopped at the last minute. Now they're actually seeking a funding lifeline to keep going. The CEO is out. This is a big deal because in Chicago, WeWork is one of the biggest landlords, isn't it?
Correct. The largest landlord.
So talk to us a little bit about what's happened at WeWork and how that's impacting Chicago.
The issues with WeWork, it was kind of in my opinion, personally, somewhat of a phantom landlord. Obviously, they're in the business of releasing space. They're a sub-landlord, in effect, for all of the space that they sign long-term leases. I think their leases are usually 15 years, and they're signing leases at a month at a time. They have a 15-year commitment to these landlords that own these buildings, and 1 month sublease space is not a good business model. Obviously, there's a lot of turnover. There's a lot of startups or even seasoned businesses that are occupying WeWork now, but the amount of competition that's in the space and the uncertainty of what's going to happen, as we're talking about the possible recession coming, it really is a scary prospect for what could happen with what could be a flood of sublease or shadow vacant space hit the market.
Yeah, and even if there's not a recession, if something happens to WeWork and they go out of business and that model shuts down, that's a lot of space that's going to be left with the question mark.
Absolutely. There's a lot of dominoes that could fall. The landlords will not have all that vacant space. The mortgage holders will have seen all of that revenue that was paying the debt service dry up. And there's just a lot of space. And who knows if the office markets that WeWork are in, if the tenant demand is strong enough to backfill that space, it remains to be seen.
Is there something with the business model that's not right with WeWork?
I think fundamentally, yes. Like I said, if you have a 15-year lease, you'd like to have a 15-year tenant backfill that space. I mean, like I said, they're doing 1 month, 2 month leases at a time. Obviously, they have some longer term leases, but they're leasing one desk at a time. They're leasing two desks, one conference space or conference room. That's a lot of space to fill, and there's nothing wrong. Plenty of good quality businesses have started in people's basements, people's garages. Mm-hmm. So I think in the midst of a recession, startups will retrench to the cheapest space available, which would be mom and dad's basement potentially or in their garage, and not have to pay a significant amount of money for rent for a startup.
I want to switch to another story. I saw this in the RE journals, the idea of what it takes to keep the keep yourself current in the commercial real estate space. People always say you have to innovate or die. What does innovation look like in the CRE space?
There's a lot of technology in real estate. I think it really is focused mainly on, is segregated sector to sector, asset class by asset class. Industrial real estate has multiple fields of technology, you know, namely with automation, supply chain. The technology that's within warehouses now is pretty remarkable. Apartments, for instance, a developer of mine launched an app recently that transforms your phone into your key in a way to book services, amenities. You can log maintenance requests through your phone. That change of technology is really kind of what pushes retail. They're using metrics now to track sales per square foot. You know, obviously grocery stores have always had, it might be a hidden magic or old intuition where to put certain produce, mm-hmm. where to put certain products on shelves. All that is changing. But I think the when it gets down to it, it's human interaction that is going to always be a major part of real estate, commercial real estate particularly.
Has there been a lack of training, workforce training, to incorporate some of these new innovative ideas? Have some of the groups, some of the industries, some of the companies that we connect to the CRE world, have they been slow to adapt some of this stuff? Is that part of the problem?
I think it has to be. I don't have any direct knowledge exactly of what steps companies are taking to train their workforce or potential workforce. But I think if you're an industrial user, for instance, and you're in a you want to locate your business with a highly skilled workforce, and where we are in the economy now, with unemployment rates pretty low, it's hard to find skilled labor. So costs are going to increase to be able to attract that labor. And you need to find labor that's bright enough, skilled enough to be able to understand and learn new technologies as they progress, which could be potentially later on in their career. Some people may be a little hesitant to change or resistant to that change, but it's really the future that all workers, even what some would consider blue-collar workers, are going to have to adapt and learn to adopt new abilities in their career.
Okay, Dan, good chat. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
They can call me directly. My number is 312-544-4657, or my email address, daniel.barrins@associatedbank.com. That's daniel.barrins@associatedbank.com.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
Dan Barron, Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. You can find more of those at WGNRadio.com on the opening bell page and head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership.